Under the Scales is a proud member of the Osiris family of podcasts. Find other music podcasts you'll love at osirispod.com. Do you know what just happened? Jam just happened. On December 6th in New York on the Lower East Side in a club called New Blue, Scott Metzger, Adam Chase, Aaron Magner, and Jay White got together to form a supergroup who entertained a sold-out crowd with more than 2 hours of improvised music. To see it, you can go to nugs.net, who live streamed the event and will always have the video up for your pleasure, or check it out in podcast form. Go to osirispod.com/jam for more information. Now here's a very important piece of news. Jam Just Happened number 2 is already in the works. I'll give you a hint. It's going to be in Manhattan, and it's going to be in February, most likely. That's all I got right now. This one will sell out too, now that people have heard about how great the first one was. Scott Metzger is putting together another supergroup as we speak. Lastly, the Big Cypress Festival was Phish's most ambitious festival ever, and was quite possibly the biggest New Year's celebration, as the world ushered in the new millennium. I was down there in the Florida Everglades when 1999 became 2000, and it was one of the highlights of my life, and I'm reliving it now with the 20th anniversary tribute podcast called After Midnight, which refers to Phish's all-night set that they played as 1999 vanished and 2000 came rushing in. Listen to the band and fans and organizers all discuss how and why this festival came to be, and also how it has become Phish legend. Go to osirispod.com/aftermidnight to subscribe. The fourth episode just came out, and the fifth and last one comes out next Thursday. osirispod.com/aftermidnight.
Hello and welcome to Under the Scales. I'm Tom Marshall, your host, and we are again in Decibel 11 in New York City. And today I am with Cal Kehoe. Cal, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Tom?
I'm doing really, really great. Now, Cal, for those of you who don't know, you are likely to know soon, is a fantastic guitarist I was able to meet a long time ago when you were like 14 or something.
Yep, exactly 10 years ago today, December 2nd.
10 years ago,
2009.
Where was the show?
It was at the Garden. It was at MSG.
And we had good seats. I remember we were kind of up front.
Yep.
And I met your dad, you and your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my dad immediately said that I was a guitar player to you.
Uh-huh.
And then we struck up a conversation about guitar players, and you said, what are some of your influences? I said, Frank Zappa, Jerry, and Jimi Hendrix. And then like 30 seconds passed, and you were like, Trey's pretty good. And I embarrassingly was like, yeah, dude, I love Trey. Yeah, 10 years ago today.
It was at a Phish show, so you didn't really have to say. Yeah.
Exactly.
But Trey is one of your big influences.
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
That's cool. So now, later in life, you are now playing for?
Pink Talking Phish.
And so covering Phish is part of your daily sustenance. That's
every
part of your daily routine.
Day. And learning Phish every single day, too, which is a big task. Big, big task.
Now, Cal is being humble. He's up to it because he's a really, really great guitarist. And a lot of my friends know Cal from a weird thing. You somehow have a really good relationship with either it's Live Nation or someone. And I've seen you at several of the VIP pre-shows at like a Live Nation event, like at Camden, for example, mm-hmm. and one, I forget where I've also seen you.
Was it Hartford?
Yes.
And I think Saratoga as well.
There you go. Yep.
Mainly for Phish shows.
It's great. What's that gig like?
It's honestly been such a blessing playing those shows because it's fun. I mean, a lot of it is cover material. I do throw some of my songs in there. And it's mainly for like all of the VIP, like season ticket holders, at those venues. But like, you know, if you buy a ticket off of, you know, Ticketmaster or something, it says VIP, you have access.
Right. Sometimes you'll get in randomly.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, it's pre-show, you know, Phish doesn't have openers.
Yeah, very, very few even register in my memory.
Yeah, so it's weird playing pre-Phish, but it's fun.
You're the opener.
It's weird, but yeah, we've met at a couple of those. I think the one, I mentioned it in the last time I was on Under the Scales. We met in 2016 at Hartford because I was playing Heart of the Sunrise.
Oh, right.
And that's when you came up and you were like, what's up?
Yes.
Let's write some music.
Yeah. So Cal is really influenced, as you can tell, by the same guitarist and stuff that I am. And especially now that you're playing Pink Floyd and Talking Heads.
Yeah.
Well, who's the guitarist, would you say, in Talking Heads? I mean, that's kind of Adrian Belew, right?
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. I was thinking about that on the ride over here.
It's Jerry Harrison, too.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, all three of them rhythmically are pretty, I mean, even David Byrne, too. He's an awesome guitar player.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right, right. But he never really took solos or whatever. I mean, I think of you as a big soaring soloist.
Oh, thank you.
So Cal has, I think you'd probably describe it better. Maybe we can even play a few clips of it right now, just get music going, because this podcast is going to have a lot of your music in it.
Yeah.
And there's something that you do at those pre-Phish VIP gigs, which is incredible, and I've always really admired, like, Zach Deputy style, where, and Trey does it sometimes.
That's right.
You know, like at his acoustic gig, where you play a little riff and then record it with your foot pedal, and it kind of loops around and you play against that loop.
Yep.
Now you build up several, like, deep.
Yeah, live looping has been something that's been a part of me for a long time, because I didn't have a band growing up. So I learned how to do that. I learned how to be my own band. And I also wanted to differentiate myself from, you know, just like a white acoustic guitar player.
Got it.
You know, so,
right.
So I want to do something a little unique. So yeah, I try to make it sound like there's a live band, and I have three different loop pedals. So I'll have like an A, B, and a C section.
Oh, cool.
For a song. And yeah, it sometimes takes a little bit, maybe like a minute to 2 minutes to set up a full loop, which is a lot, but it's really fun doing that to an audience when they're trying to figure out what song I'm playing. And then when I go into the song, especially at a Phish crowd. Been a part. That's what I do every time I play a solo show, and I solo on an electric guitar. So
yeah.
I loop on an acoustic and solo on electric. And I did that at Camden.
Yep.
You saw that at Camden.
You do some kind of like octave divider or something to get bass going.
Yeah. Yeah. I have this really awesome Digitech pedal called the Drop, which literally just drops your guitar an octave, and it also can drop it in different semitones as well. But that's on an acoustic, it sounds exactly like a bass. And I'll do percussive stuff by like actually physically hitting my acoustic guitar too.
And it sounds really good.
Thank you.
You've gotten the ability. I think Zach Deputy has two mics. Like one is like a background or a percussion kind of thing he uses to build up the loops.
He does.
And then one's for his vocals.
Yeah, I know he does some beatboxing. But we actually played right after Zach Deputy on the same stage at Wormtown Festival, and we were going to open with This Must Be the Place, Naive Melody by Talking Heads.
Yeah.
And Zach decided to do it instead. So he played it before we could, and it was awesome. But yeah, I think he was beatboxing and using some sort of drum pad.
Yeah.
He's awesome, though.
Now, Cal's cool because, like, you have your acoustic will be strapped on you,
mm-hmm.
and your electric, your PRS, Paul Reed Smith.
Yes.
Beautiful electric.
Thank you.
Is standing on this cool monopod.
Yeah.
And you kind of just sidle up to it and start wailing.
Yeah, it's like a $70 piece of plastic that I, there's these straps that go through my guitar. And like I saw Carlos Santana have a classical guitar and Steve Howe on this stand. And then I researched it. I think it's called an Embrace, and it stands on a mic stand. So I swing my acoustic behind me and then I play on the electric on this stand. It's kind of, I'm doing the hand motions. No one can see it, but
right.
I'm,
this
I'm
is a podcast, yeah. But, it's a good,
this is a podcast.
Welcome. This is a podcast. Yeah. It's a good, move. 'Cause it wakes people up if they've like gotten used to, you know, the loops are going around. Yeah. Suddenly you jump on the guitar. It's yeah. awesome. Yeah. Let's play a little bit of that. That's awesome. That is great. I love that stuff. So Cal, you must have started, because if you were 14 when we met and you were already a guitarist, what was your like first professional, like you kind of knew you wanted to become a gigging guitarist. Was that like were those kind of your first paid gigs, or were you in a band?
Yeah, I was in a band, actually. Ironically enough, I was in this band called MOTP. They were a band out of Long Island, and that was like we played at two Battle of the Bands in a row in Richfield, Connecticut, called Band Jam. And we won one year with this like awesome Beatles medley, and these kids were so talented. And that was like I think that was like a crowd of maybe 600 people, maybe a little less. And like being on stage like that, I had performed by myself, and I was never nervous. And I was never nervous then, but it definitely opened my eyes. And this was in high school, and I was like, I just want to do this all the time. And I want to play for this amount of people.
And I've met your parents at some gigs, and they're incredibly supportive too.
Yeah, they're
so
awesome.
They've always sort of like helped direct you this direction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one thing I wanted to say about that last band is Trey and Mike were side stage for what that band is now. They're the Lemon Twigs.
Awesome.
From Hicksville, Long Island.
Cool.
So you, shout out to those guys.
Yeah, shout out to the Lemon Twigs.
Yeah.
I can't do anything. I am nothing. Our lives are meaningless. Swim in the sunshine.
So Trey and Mike liked them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was like my high school band. Like I used to commute to Long Island to practice with those guys, and they were awesome. And now they're killing it. And obviously they got Trey and Mike's attention, which was awesome.
Yeah. So rewind a little bit. 'Cause I feel like I have watched your trajectory ever since that Heart of the Sunrise solo, when I reached out to you and said I wanted to write a song with you.
Yeah.
Or we should write a song together or something like that.
Yeah.
And then often I'll say that and like, you know, maybe someone will say, oh, that sounds cool or whatever, and not follow up. But you followed up.
Yeah. I was persistent for like a few months.
Months.
Yeah. Like, few emails.
Yeah. And it was good. Like you kept sending me ideas, and finally, like I was kind of like, yeah, I don't really like that one. And then I don't really like that. I don't really like that. And finally, one was just like, whoa, that's cool. I just had happened to write some lyrics that I really liked, and I started singing them to your track. And at that point, I knew I had a song, and I sent it to you. I sent you sort of a rough demo of it.
We're spreading thoughts out into space. We're brushing moments off our plates. A swiftly tilting world like ours is pulled through space by distant stars. Worlds come loose across the globe. The axis breaks, we start to roll. Chaos reigns when this occurs. So keep your balance, watch your words. When I drive on.
And then you took it. You went nuts. You went into the studio.
Yeah.
You had a band. Like, you had a cool drummer. Lots of cool stuff.
Rob Allen from New York. And Greg Giorgio produced that, who works at the studio called Tarkin Studios, where Trey recorded the album Traveler, which was cool. I think we did vocals at Anthony's studio. Sonic Boom
in, yep, Raritan, New Jersey.
Yes.
NewJerseyRecordingStudio.com.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where I tracked the guitar solo too, and I remember being like, that was an awful take. Let's do another one. You were like, don't you dare.
It was great. It was a really great take. And you left that one, I hope.
I think I did. Yeah, that's the one.
You know, the old studio, like chasing the demo.
Yeah.
Right? You can never make it as good as the demo. So yeah. I knew it was a good solo. So.
We had a good demo too.
Yes.
That the demo version of Limbo with just you and I, like, just on GarageBand vocals.
It's really good.
I have it still. It's
cool.
Pretty awesome.
I'm going to go back and listen to it. But yeah, let's play like a 15-second teaser of Limbo now, but then we'll play the full song at the end of this podcast.
Awesome.
Because I think it's good enough that we should close this episode with Limbo. But here it is.
Limbo.
I forgot that. We should talk about you and I wrote another couple songs together as well. And all of these were in conjunction with Anthony.
Yes.
Right?
And one of them with Sherman.
Oh yeah, Sherman Ewing.
Yes.
Now Sherman Ewing goes back to my old Princeton Day School gang with Trey. So Sherman was in our grade and sort of coincidentally became a guitarist in New York City, kind of an acoustic singer-songwriter guy.
Yeah.
And happened to know Anthony, but also, you know, hung out with Trey.
Yeah.
So despite my never introducing them, there was like a musical triangle there as well. So Anthony and Sherman had written this song with me, I think, and we gave it to you because I'm not sure what had happened to it.
I think the way you guys explained it, you sent it to me as an example, actually, on how we should go about writing Limbo. Because we did it like all via email. So you just basically covered it. Well, yeah, I think. And then I ran it by you and you're like, yeah, that's cool, I guess. But no, it was awesome because I think what you guys had done is you'd written three different songs or three different parts and then just all mashed it together.
Yeah.
I love that demo you sent me.
Goodbye, Mr. Sunshine. Come around, I should know. Run around, watch you go.
Chorus is so, like, I don't know who came up with what, but I think you came up with the Goodbye, Mr.
Goodbye,
Sunshine.
Goodbye,
yeah.
Mr. Sunshine.
Yep.
Yeah, let's hear what you turn that chorus into. Beautiful. That's awesome. I love that. And then another song we wrote together is called
One More Dream.
Oh yeah, that's pretty cool.
That was also another thing where you and Anthony were working on something and you sent it to me and you said, oh, this would be cool. And Anthony was talking about us doing it for the after show we were going to do together for Baker's Dozen.
Oh right.
And then I ended up finishing it in the studio, because we needed one more song on the EP.
You guys did. We did do an after show after Baker's Dozen.
We did.
And did I jump up on stage?
You did for a few songs.
What songs did we sing?
I think we did. You weren't up there for Limbo, but I know we did Theme from the Bottom.
Oh yeah,
Gumbo.
Oh, right, right.
There must be one other. But the funny story, to kind of go tangential here, or this was a good segue, actually. Richard James from Pink Talking Fish was the special guest that night. And a mutual friend called him and was like, do you want to sit in on this after show? It was on the jam night for Baker's Dozen. And
Jam-filled, that's right.
Jam-filled, yeah.
Yeah.
It was at the Iridium Jazz Club here in New York. And yeah, he sat in with us he did Psycho Killer and Sand, and then we did Theme and Gumbo. And if it weren't for that gig, I wouldn't be in Pink Talking Fish, actually.
Was he the keyboard player guy?
Yes.
And he played standing up?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he had the amazing keyboard rig.
He had some cool keyboards.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
He's great. Awesome.
And I think, was Rob Compa there too?
Rob Compa was there as well.
And he's a great guitarist of
yes.
Dopapod, of course.
Dopapod, yeah.
Yeah, he's a great guitarist on the scene now as well.
Yeah, Rob Compa's a good friend. He's awesome. And yep. he was a guitar player of Pink Talking Fish as well for a few shows.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
What happened to their guitarists? Like, what's the reason for the rotation? Like, I know you guys play a lot, which is demanding on anyone.
We do. I think it's, like, we play about 150 shows a year.
Oh my God.
Which is a lot. In a van and trailer traveling around the country. I think they were just looking for something new. And Rick called me in December when they were starting to think about finding a new guitar player. And we only had one session. They must have given me 50 songs to learn, and it was like Divided Sky and Yem and I think Stash and a lot of Pink Floyd songs, which I was really happy to like learn those songs as well. And it just seemed to work. Zach, the drummer, Zach Berwick, he's amazing. He immediately was like, you do stuff that Trey did in the 90s, so I think we need to start doing that. And then they just wanted me to be in the band. So yeah, it was a long process, and it took a few months because they had some other shows with the previous guitar player.
Was it an audition process for you, or you kind of just learned them and played for them one day, and then you heard from them later, or how does that work?
So I did the I just went up to play with them. I learned songs and the way that they do transitions. We must have played 30 songs that day in Massachusetts, and then they called me the next day at like noon. I was going in to teach some students I had at this music school, and they called me and they're like, "We want to offer you the position." And they didn't go through any other guitar players, which was cool. It just seemed to click right away. Like, we all get along so well, both as friends and as musicians. We really I think it's a really good thing playing with those guys, because our improvisation is just really strong.
Mack Weldon sponsors Under the Scales. We are proud to represent them, the top men's essentials brand that believes in smart design and premium fabrics. It started for me with a visit to MackWeldon.com. They have a great online store with men's boxer briefs, and trunks, which are underwear somewhere between briefs and boxer briefs. What if you actually want boxers? Well, they have those too. How about long underwear and t-shirts and socks? Yup, yup, and yup. They have swimwear, sweatshirts, shorts, jackets, sweatpants. But for me, like I said, it started with boxer briefs. Gray with blue stripes, by the way. They have a huge selection of different materials and colors and styles. I used to buy a 5-pack of underwear at the department store, whatever was on sale. No more. The comfort and fit and materials are just so far beyond anything you might have gotten used to. In fact, I'm certain Mack Weldon is better than whatever you're wearing right now. It's basically the perfect pair of underwear. They obsess with every seam and every stitch. They have some high-tech fabrics too, including a line of silver underwear and shirts that are naturally antimicrobial. They want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair of underwear, you can keep it and they will refund you with no questions asked. For 20% off your first order, visit MackWeldon.com and enter promo code SCALES. You guys are going to love Mack Weldon, I promise. And that's MackWeldon.com and enter promo code SCALES for 20% off your first order. Thanks.
So Pink Talking Fish. These are, you know, just happens to be three of my favorite bands. And I think a lot of people's, you know, would consider those three in their favorites, at least of our fishy friends.
Yeah.
Also love Pink Floyd and Talking Heads. What's your guys' philosophy in terms of setting up a gig? Like, how do you squeeze all three of those bands into one night?
So, like, set list construction?
Yeah.
We will do, if we start with a Fish song or a Fish cover, whether it be, like, 2001 or Frankenstein.
Right.
We will either do Talking Heads or Pink Floyd next. So we try to do it in threes.
So there's always like a triple rotation sort of thing.
Yeah. The only time that that's different is if we're doing an original transition. So we'll wedge other songs in big dogs, as we like to call them, which are like long compositions, like in the middle of Yem. When it gets to the spacey part, we'll put like, you know, a softer Pink Floyd song, or we'll put, you know, a Talking Head song. We'll put like Houses in Motion in the middle of Yem.
Oh, cool.
And then we'll finish out Yem either right after Houses in Motion or at the end of the set, which is really fun.
Cool. Wow. That's awesome. And that's you. That's since, March of this year.
Yeah.
It's been you.
March 14th. It was my first show.
Great.
Harrisburg, Pennsylvania.
And you've played how many shows with them so far?
Oh, I was trying to count this. I believe I'll be at 100 on this next run. I'll hit 100 shows since March, which is, yeah, it's been fun.
That's a lot.
I'm really tired all the time, but it's been fun.
So what are your favorite Phish songs to play? And let's play some of them.
Oh, man. We play Reba very frequently because it's just a blast. And that little like chase section is one of the most complicated. Yep. It's crazy. That took a really long time for Rick and I to. Rick had it, but it just took me a long time.
It starts out in unison.
Yep.
And then it goes with Trey leading and Paige trailing, or Paige leading and Trey trailing.
Paige leads, Trey trails.
Yeah.
And he honestly doesn't even finish the whole motif. Like it ends like.
Oh, right, because
there's like three notes that drop off.
Oh, okay, right. That makes sense. That's incredibly hard to play, I imagine.
It's now muscle memory. Like a lot of these songs, like David Bowie and Yem, have become, and now Split Open and Melt and Fly Famous Mockingbird have all become muscle memory.
Fly Famous Mockingbird has that really sort of fast, repetitive part.
Well, they told me Eric Gould sat down on a couch at Rick James' house. When I was trying out for those guys, there were some audition processes. I went to Rick's house and we ran through some of these songs before we did the final audition.
Uh-huh.
And Eric came by and Eric said, if you learn Fly Famous Mockingbird, you might just have the gig. And then that was like the first song we did at the audition.
Oh, wow.
So they're like, okay, which was cool. I mean, like that took me so, I woke up with a tiny guitar every single morning for like a month.
And just doing those wild scales.
Yeah. I just drilled that one part, like that whole section, for at least 3 hours every day.
Let's hear that. Nail it. Sounds pretty good, Cal.
It's so hard. Trey, you write hard music.
Trey always says that he's made his retirement difficult, right? Because like the Stones get to play sort of easy songs in their older age. And Trey's got, you know, Fluffhead and difficult stuff.
Just started learning Fluffhead.
Oh, yeah?
That took the band 6 months to learn.
When you guys are playing live, what band would you say gets the biggest rise out of the crowd?
It's so bizarre because sometimes it's different. It's different almost every time. For like a Phish after show.
Of course.
It's always Phish.
Okay.
Which we do those frequently. But a lot of the time, of all ages, it's Pink Floyd, which is really cool.
Like, I would imagine that like also like, you know, we're in the nexus of Phish country here in New York City. But I imagine you guys tour the entire country.
We do.
And I could see, like, you know, if you're in Minnesota or something, that maybe Pink Floyd being more universally known than Phish, especially out there, might get the bigger.
We played on the Midwest tour, we did a show in we did a show in Minnesota and that we opened with Yem, and then I think we did I can't remember the rest of it, but it was, we did a lot of Pink Floyd that night, and you're right. Like, people freaked out over that. But people really do love, like, seeing Phish cover bands, which is cool. You know, but I also think that we're a little more, because of Pink Floyd and Talking Heads, we're just a little more unique. And, like, I feel like there's there's authenticity with it because we find opportunities to improvise and like take the music out.
I love that. Yeah, yeah. I have a couple of, you know, personal favorite Phish cover bands, but I really like you guys in that it's broken up a bit.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like transitions like provide a like, and like just the fact that so many of these songs were almost like they're like the transitions are seamless, and I feel like they were written on the same day. You know, it's weird. Like Slippery People into Sand, or we do like we do Young Lust into Slow Llama. I mean, we have so many of them. My favorite one we did was Camel Walk into Have a Cigar.
Oh, wow.
So we do all of Camel Walk, and then we'll go do-do-do-do-ga-do-do-do-do, which is like, that was like my favorite one ever. I think I put my hand up in that show, and I was like, yeah!
Them to their feet.
That, yeah.
That transition. Would you do that transition again, like, you know, realizing that it went over well?
Yeah.
Or do you guys vary so much that wouldn't necessarily happen again?
Sometimes we vary. I mean, there are shows where we'll go crazy on the transitions. Like if you look at the set list, the arrows are everywhere.
Mm.
And we do that so much with like alumni Jimmy Page. We'll put like so many songs in the middle of it, or we'll do something in between Forbin's Mockingbird. But we try not to do it the same every single time. Like we look at our set lists like the way Phish or like Pearl Jam would do that, or The Dead, where we don't want to play the same thing every night, which is tough with Pink Floyd and Talking Heads because there's only so much material. But, you know, Phish is still writing music today. So it's like there's a lot to tackle. Like,
so Cal, I heard a recording of you guys doing Dogs, but you know, Pink Floyd song, but you open that up, like you say, that's a big dog song, right? And it has a big sort of kind of almost quiet, mellow, repetitive part in the middle.
Yeah.
And then you jammed a song in there. What was that?
We did Psycho Killer.
Thank you.
thing is, with that, the opportunities are almost endless with these like long Pink Floyd songs of wedging other songs in.
Do you guys play Echoes? That's to me like the longest.
We did. Oh, I think we did Echoes. What's the Use?
Oh, wow.
I'll have to verify that, but yeah, we did like we've done Sheep with Carini in the middle. We've done Sheep with Ghost in the middle.
Wow.
Dog's Ghost is always awesome.
So if you're a Fish fan and a Pink Floyd fan, or a Pink Floyd fan and or a Talking Heads fan, you got to see Pink Talking Fish with Cal now as the lead guitarist, where you guys are kind of permanently on tour.
Permanently, yeah. Like, we'll go 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. A lot of it in the summertime is like weekend warrior stuff, but
where are you based out of?
Well, we're all based out of Boston.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm still in Connecticut, but the other guys are in the, you know, greater Boston area.
Are you guys doing any of the after shows for New Year's?
We are. We're doing the 28th and the 29th at the Gramercy Theater.
Oh, great.
Post MSG. And the first night we're doing all of Dark Side of the Moon. With some special guests, and then the second night we're doing a Beastie Boys themed show with DJ Logic. So yeah, we've learned 11 Beastie Boys songs, and we have a really awesome Camel Walk Funky Boss by the Beastie Boys mashup, which is pretty sweet, rather dope, as the children say. but yeah, we're doing Beastie Boys.
So for a Fish after show, you're not going to be heavy on the Fish, obviously.
Depending on what they played,
right?
Yeah, so we did one the other night post Providence for the first night, the second night. I'm sorry, and yeah, we were monitoring the set list heavily, making sure that our set list would stay intact. We
you
still
don't
got
want
to
double
play.
Up.
Yeah,
there was a slow llama though.
There was a slow llama. We didn't play llama, but we played like Reba, and we did Split Open and Melt, which, you know, you never know with a lot of the after shows. So there have been times we did a St. Louis one. We had to take out almost every song we had in our set list because they played all of them.
That's like an annoying thing for a band.
Yeah, but it's still fun. That's like it's
when another band determines your set list. It's not that cool.
Yeah, that's true.
Cal, at a couple shows where I was sitting, I remember one time introducing you to, I think, Trey's dad.
Yeah, Ernie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you and your dad now have become pals with him, at least at the shows.
Yeah, at the shows, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, my dad turned to Ernie after we had talked to him for a while after Divided Sky. And he said, hey, that was a really great Divided Sky. And Ernie said, it's the best I've ever heard it. And then exactly a year later at the Garden, my dad said the same thing to Ernie, and Ernie said, that's the best I've ever heard it. And then
it could have been. Though.
Yeah. and then Ernie told us the story about how Trey wrote Divided Sky. And it actually ended up in the Trey movie, the Trey documentary, that same story, exactly how he told it to us.
So I'm involved a little bit in the writing of Divided Sky.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about exclusively probably the music part that Trey worked out.
I'm assuming the composition part, like the palindrome section and all the way through.
Yeah.
We were talking about this before.
Yeah. I think, so the part where we sing, like the Divided Sky, Wind Blows High, I've said that probably now twice in my podcast about how we did compose that on top of the rhombus because of a funny light effect that was occurring in the sky, which made it look like there's a dark half of the sky and a light half. So over and over again, we sang Divided Sky, the wind blows high, over and over again. So then he took that and added it to this amazing thing that he'd written, which had a code name, at least when I saw it the very first time, it was codenamed Log, because he... At the very first track, I think he was hitting this wooden thing. It was kind of like, dook-a-dook-a-dook-a-dook-a-dook-a-dook-a-dook. And then he played like this glockenspiel sort of thing, like, ding-ding-ding-ding, ding-ding-ding-ding, ding-ding-ding. It's like a metal, hitting metal.
Yeah.
Really like bright sounding. And that one might have wound up on something that you can get now, right?
I think it's on the white tape.
That original version.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was codenamed Log.
It's only like a minute long,
too. Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I remember he worked hard on that, really hard on that. That was cool. And so maybe then there's another part that he was working on as well.
Yeah, I mean, that song is, that has to be one of my favorites.
Do you guys play that?
We do play that. That nice. Is, that palindrome section is amazing.
Which is the palindrome?
That whole section. Oh. Because what happens is the way I learned it was they play one whole part forwards, and then they just do it backwards, and then forwards again, but only halfway through, and then they'll do the jumping, and then the rest of the song happens. It's
Whoa.
It's wild, but it took a long time to break it down. But that was actually my Berklee audition. That and Peaches and Regalia, which is very... It puts a lot of things in perspective because I'm playing both of those songs now. I'm playing Divided Sky and Peaches almost regularly.
Did you go to Berklee?
I did for a little bit.
Okay. You didn't graduate Berklee?
I left to I was just too busy playing shows.
Got it.
I was playing so many shows. Cool. So yeah, I left and then here I am.
Yeah, here you are, and I'm glad you're here today. And thank you for making the drive down to New York City from Connecticut on a very snowy...
Yeah.
December day.
Yeah.
It's really nice to talk to you.
Thank
Cal.
You. And if there's one thing I will say, I don't think I'd be in Pink Talking Fish or where I am now without you. So thank you.
Well, that's very nice of you to say. And I don't necessarily believe it, but it's really cool. But let's keep a promise that we mentioned at the beginning of this episode and have this episode end with what I consider an amazing song that you and I wrote together. With Anthony's help, correct? Or was this one entirely us?
This was just you and me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. But recorded in Anthony's studio.
Recorded,
that's
yeah.
right. Okay. Yeah, and this one's called Limbo, and I'm going to play it now in its entirety. Thanks a lot, Cal.
Yeah, thank you. Let's write some more music.
Let's do it.
Out into space, we're brushing moments off our plates. A swiftly tilting world like ours is pulled through space by distant stars. Words come loose across the globe. The axis breaks, we start to roll. A chaos reigns when this occurs. So keep your balance, watch your words. When I drive up flipping station. And every word requires a different translation. We'll stop to shake and the road gets rough. No matter what I take, you know it's not enough. Cause I'm in limbo. Across the line, a single moment to embrace, a splash of sunlight on your face. It's not enough, I need some more, a little wind to reach the shore. No matter what I do or say, this might not get me through the day. When I drive off flipping station to station, we'll be right back.
Osiris.
This podcast is In the Loop, the Legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with live experiences and podcasts about artists and topics you love. Get in the loop at osirispod.com.